going back to these guys, you know, singing their praises, which I can't do enough of, but they make it so easy. You know, Clark will outline the harmony in such a way, and Daniel will create these textures where it's just so natural to play with them without the chordal instrument. But in addition to that, from a practicing standpoint, yeah, there are times when I will only practice with like a sort of a canned bass line, you know, in like the iReal Pro play along or whatever, and just kind of get rid of the chords because I want to try to be responsible for filling that harmony in myself. And it is something that you have to practice and you have to definitely be aware of. And then there are times when those chords are absolutely necessary. I mean, it depends on the tune, I think.
Hey everybody, it's Mike Jeffers, Chicago Jazz Magazine, chicagojazz.com, and welcome to another episode of Around Town. And today we've got saxophonist Chris Madsen. He's been on the show before, so I know you've probably seen him on the show. I'm sure many of you have seen him performing live all around town, but he's got a brand new recording coming out May 12th. He's got a release show coming up May 10th, Wednesday, May 10th, for his new recording Trio Book. Now, he did a recording in 2019 called Bonfire with the same trio, I believe, and that was a lot of original tunes. This has got more jazz standards, quote-unquote jazz standards, some obscure jazz standards, and one original. So we're going to talk all about this with Chris. And, of course, he's busy. He's performing. He's also a professor. He's very important. I don't know why he's on my show. But, Chris, thanks for being on. It is good to see you, and congratulations on the new recording.
Thank you, Mike. It's really good to be here, and thanks for having me on. And yeah, it's busy time, I think, for everyone. But I'm trying to throw my hat in the ring and try to get another recording out there. So yeah.
Well, talk about this because, okay, the first one, Bonfire, which was in 2019, that had Dana Hall and Clark Summers and you, right? Or was there anybody else on that one?
There was Stu Mindeman, a
That's
great
right.
pianist, Stu Mindeman. So it was a quartet, and yeah, it was. You're right. It was all original music. It had been a long time since I had put out an album of originals, and I thought it was time, and it was, and it was a lot of fun to do that. And those guys, you couldn't ask for a better rhythm section. They're just amazing, of course. And this time, I wanted to, yeah, just explore the chordless thing. I've sort of dabbled in the chordless thing over the years, with different incarnations, different instrumentations, and things like that. But I'd never really recorded an official album of it. And also, there was a series of social media things I did sort of pre-pandemic. There were some duets that I did with Clark, and then some trio things that I did with Clark and Dana. So we thought we'd just make it official, you know, and do an actual album. And yeah, I'm really happy with how it came out.
So talk a little bit about this because I recognize a lot of the tunes. I mean, you can go down the list of tunes, but a lot of those tunes you hear like Chick Corea playing, or you hear Wes Montgomery, West Coast Blues is on there. I wouldn't think that a saxophonist, upright bass, and drums would be playing West Coast Blues, but it's really interesting how that works. And the other thing that's really interesting is how much space is allowed now, because I'm just used to hearing it with keys or guitar or something like that. Man, there's a lot of space, which allows you guys to lay a lot of textures in. And really, what I listened to this recording, I heard obviously you guys are doing a lot of interaction when you're playing in general, but this almost there's even more on this because there's just so much more room without that chordal instrument on there. How did you pick the repertoire for this recording? Because that had to be something that you had to really kind of rack your brain about and say, what really would inspire me to play these tunes too, right?
So yeah, the idea behind picking this repertoire was, you know, some of basically I had to love the tunes, which I do. All the tunes are by different composers, and they're all sort of from that classic jazz period of the 1960s, and a lot of them are from the Blue Note era and label, which I was kind of weaned on. as a young musician. And so I had to love the tunes and sort of tunes that I wasn't that familiar with. But also one big consideration, as you said, is that since there's no chords involved, the harmony has to be a certain kind of way in order for it to be expressed properly. By just the counterpoint between the bass and myself on saxophone. And so there was one tune, actually, the sort of the oddest tune that I chose is a Omar Hakim tune called Amethyst Secrets. And of course,
I didn't
Omar.
recognize that tune, but then I heard it and I recognized it, but I could not remember whose tune that was. Okay.
Yeah, it's an Omar Hakim tune. And I found it just scouring YouTube for great concerts. And I saw this concert from like 1991 with Wayne and Herbie and Stanley Clarke and Omar, and they played this tune, and I couldn't get it out of my head. And I figured out what it was, and that it had been recorded previously by Omar on one of his records. And so I transcribed it and did some arranging, and Clarke is doing some double stops and some different register things. And yeah, so it's a harmonic consideration, of course, like orchestrational consideration, but really I just have to love the tunes, and all these tunes are outstanding. The Wes Montgomery tune you mentioned, Wes, it's Dana actually did a very interesting kind of drum and bass kind of groove over it, and he did that on a live gig once when we just called somebody called the tune, and Dana started going into this groove. And it was just like, wow, that's such a unique take on this tune. And we figured we gotta put this down and get this recorded. So yeah, there was just a part of the repertoire choosing process was just that's it's almost it's almost as fun as that, the actual music making, because you're sort of trying to formulate what's gonna work, and it's just a lot of fun.
You know, like Eider Down, right? So, I mean, I've heard Chick play that. I heard a lot of different people play it, but Chick specifically, I was listening to it, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago, actually. It came up on something. But your take on that, and it made me think, because you know, when I remember back in the day, right? And you're at a jam session and somebody calls some tune, and it's like, okay, and it's kind of a weird instrumentation up there, because you kind of get a pick of the litter of who's going to be up there playing. And like a tune like that, all of a sudden you hear the melody and you just get inspired to do different things on it if there isn't a piano or if there isn't a guitar or something like that. And it just opens it up. The way you guys did that tune was different than the way I had heard it. But then when the melody came in and I heard you working her through the melody and through the chord changes and stuff and the way it built, it all worked. But there was so much more space involved in that tune without the chordal instrument. I mean, that's the thing that kind of shocked me, but it worked, you know?
Well, I'm glad you think it worked. I appreciate that. I mean, we thought it worked too, and it was the Eiderdown was yeah, it was just kind of an instant arrangement. It was like, hey, I'm just going to start this on my own, and you guys join in. And Dana and Clark are such master orchestrators on their instruments, and they're able to create these little symphonic textures out of just two instruments, really. And the way that obviously the rapport between those guys is incredible. They've known each other for and been playing with each other for so long, and they're both such masters of their instrument and the craft that I can just trust them to create little arrangements on the spot like that. And it's that's exactly what happened with Eiderdown. And to your point, it's like what I was talking about before. Choosing that tune, I knew that there was enough counterpoint between the chords or the bass note and then my melody note in the melody that it would come off okay, and that was one of the reasons why I chose that tune.
How often have you played like trio upright bass drums without any chordal instruments behind you? I mean, before you got into playing with these guys, I mean, was that something that you were doing a lot of? Because I gotta imagine that, you know, I mean, you can develop your ear, you can play with chordal instruments, you can play with piano and stuff, but that's got to be something when you're practicing on your own. It probably helps you know, thinking through, because you've got to hear the chord changes and everything when you're practicing on your own. And you know, is that something that you just naturally as a saxophone? Because I don't know. I mean, I'm a drummer, right? So I'm humming melodies and stuff when I'm playing. If it's the same way, I'm trying to figure out the way you think of it when you're like practicing, and then you get into a situation, how natural that is for you, or if that's something you have to really work on consciously.
Yeah, I think it's a little Well, both. I mean, it's sort of a thing of, well, going back to these guys, singing their praises, which I can't do enough of, but they make it so easy. Clark will outline the harmony in such a way, and Daniel will create these textures where it's just so natural to play with them without the chordal instrument. But in addition to that, from a practicing standpoint, there are times when I will only practice with like a sort of a canned bass line, in like the iReal Pro play along or whatever, and just kind of get rid of the chords because I want to try to be responsible for filling that harmony in myself. And it is something that you have to practice and you have to definitely be aware of. And then there are times when those chords are absolutely necessary. I mean, it depends on the tune, I think. But yeah, I was just inspired by some of the great trio recordings of that instrumentation. Of course, Sonny Rollins definitely comes to mind. I think he kind of, I don't know about invented it, but he was certainly the first one to my knowledge, to really popularize, that kind of chordless tenor trio. And so yeah, he's, Sonny's always in the back of my mind when I'm playing that kind of music. But yeah, it's a real different kind of an experience. And I mean, Stu is such a master musician that he's another great orchestrator. And he's able to, I could see playing these tunes with chords or without them. If I had someone like Stu to get in, to just sort of fit into the mix and do his thing. So yeah, it's a fun process for sure.
What was the name of and I listened to it a million times, but I haven't listened to it in years, is Sonny, Bob Cranshaw, and Elvin, right? I mean that trio, wasn't that the live one that they did in
Yeah,
1960?
well, there's one with Sonny and Elvin and Jimmy Garrison called
That's the one.
East Broadway Rundown.
That's the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah, it's funny you mention that, man, because there was like I want to say 2018 or so. I did that record for the J-Rack, the Jazz Record Art Collective series. That same exact record, and that was with Dana and the great Dennis Carroll. And then Victor Garcia joined us on trumpet for because Freddie Hubbard was on there too. But yeah, there's yeah that's one of the that's one of the greats, man. And that's a little bit later too. I want to say that's like late 1960s, maybe 1966 or so. So that's a little. I mean, and Sonny in the '60s was in a really exploratory vein. He was really pushing the boundaries of sonic saxophone playing, and yeah, it was. Yeah, that's Rollins is just he's the king of that stuff. I mean, of course, all the great saxophone players have experimented with this at some point, but Sonny, for me, is kind of the king of it.
Well, okay, so we should talk a little bit. So you've got the releases coming out May 12th, and that's going to be everywhere, I'm assuming, streaming, download, of course, chrismadsen.net available there. But then May 10th at Epiphany Center for the Arts, 2201 South Ashland Avenue, Epiphany CHI, Epiphany Shy. .com. You are having your release concert there on Wednesday, May 10th, 7:30 p.m. And I think many of you know that are watching this. I helped to help to kind of spearhead that opening over there, and I can attest to the fact that the acoustics in the sanctuary are probably some of the best in the entire country, especially for this kind of music. So to go hear this group, the trio there with Dana and Clark and Chris play this music in that setting is going to be something very special. So talk a little bit about that show and what
Sure.
people can expect to hear. Are you going to just play the recording down? You're probably mixing a bunch of other things too, I would imagine.
Yeah, there's a couple of other tunes that I've been tossing around in my brain that sort of fit that criteria, that I think these guys would really like and dig into. But yeah, we'll definitely be playing music from the record. We probably won't play everything from the album. I'll probably pepper in some other stuff. In addition to that, I should mention we've got a residency at Andy's coming up May every Sunday in May and June as well. The late set, the 10:30 set for Andy's. And so, that's a longer set. That's 1:15, and we don't want to be playing necessarily the same stuff every week. So I'm trying to think of some other tunes to sprinkle in there. But yeah, it'll definitely be focusing on a lot of that rep from the album. And you're absolutely right about Epiphany. I mean, it's just sonically, I was fortunate to play there. I think it was July 2021 in the sanctuary for the first time, and that was with the quartet. And yeah, the acoustics are phenomenal, and it's a beautiful space, beautiful room, and really classy joint, you know. And it's beautiful. Like, yeah, I'm really looking forward to returning there, and this time, fleshing things out with the trio.
All right, so we should send everybody over one more time, chrismadsen.net. Of course, you can get all the information on all the shows he has coming up. This is very cool about the Andes thing, too. They're doing a great job over there. And just for the people that are watching this, it's usually from 6 to 9:30 is the first group. And then Chris is playing the late set, 10:30 to 11:45-ish. So that's on Sundays. That's awesome, in May and in June. And then epiphanyshy.com. For tickets, May 10th, 7:30 p.m. Chris Madsen Trio book coming out May 12th. Congratulations, man.
Thank
I'm
you.
glad you just keep creating things and putting them out and making things happen. That's awesome.
Appreciate it, Mike. Thank you. And just one more thing, I wanted to mention the label that we're putting this out on is J Mark Records, which is a collaboration between Marcus Carroll, great trumpeter in Chicago and beyond, and then John Fournier, his musical partner. And it's a brand new brand new label. And Marcus Roots just put his album out on J Mark as well. So yeah, shout out to J Mark, and thank you, Marcus, for everything you're doing. But yeah, thanks, Mike. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Okay. So everybody go check all of that out. All the information linked up down below. And as I always say, all things Chicago Jazz at chicagojazz.com. And until next time, hopefully I will see somebody out on the scene.